Charlie Paul off the range.
It was not undertaken during the previous administration, as I
Soviet entities, and for that matter, the United States, had enough on our plate to stop Vietnam. Laos would not have been possible had it not been for Cambodia. Cambodia cutting off one vital supply line, and thereby practically bringing enemy activity in the southern half of South Vietnam to an end, released the South Vietnamese forces, who by this time had not only gained confidence in but also had additional strength, released them for undertaking what they had not undertaken even 8 months ago, and incurred on their own into Laos with only U.S. air support. The decision to do it now, or I think perhaps the decision not to do it before, is that the United States, neither the United States nor the South Vietnamese felt that they apparently had the capability to do it. The fact that the decision to do it now was that based on the fact that the South Vietnamese, because of the confidence and training they gained as a result of their attitude and their actions in Cambodia, the South Vietnamese felt that they were able to undertake our commander's dream and that therefore we could take
it. Mr. President, could you discuss for this your evaluation of the possibility of Communist China entering this situation now that it's expanded into Laos or into the South Vietnamese over the North Vietnam?
Let me refer to the situation just presently exists rather than the hypothesis of what the South Vietnamese might be in North Vietnam. As far as the actions in southern Laos are concerned, they present no threat to communist China and should not be interpreted by the communist Chinese as being a threat against them. As you know, the communist Chinese have been operating in northern Laos for some time. But this action is not directed against communist China. It is directed against the North Vietnamese who are pointed toward South Vietnam and toward Cambodia. And consequently, I do not believe that the communist Chinese have any reason to interpret this threat against them or any reason they're not therefore to react to it.
Could you get us your evaluation of how many Laotian operations are going to enter our nation's
And incidentally, don't hesitate, smaller forum, if you can ask your follow-up. As far as the Laotian operation is concerned, the reports that have come from the field, I think, generally, give an accurate picture, except of course on the, for the day-to-day tendency to hypo this or that incident into a crisis. The operation, and I read a complete report from General Abrams this morning, the operation has gone according to plan. The South Vietnamese have already cut three major roads. We call it roads, we say trails, which lead from Palm down into Cambodia and of course to Da Vietnam. The South Vietnamese have run into very heavy resistance on the roads going into Palm. We expected that resistance, putting it in the context of the earlier reply. Cambodian action in May and June cut one pipeline, a pipeline from Chino Trail into the southern half of South Vietnam. This action would either cut or seriously disrupt the other pipeline or lifeline. The lifeline coming from down through Laos, the Ho Chi Minh Trail, into the northern half of South Vietnam. Therefore, we expected the North Vietnamese to have to fight here or give up the struggle to conquer South Vietnam, Cambodia, and their influence extends to other parts of Southeast Asia. Finally,
quite important to know General Abrams' evaluation, which I specifically asked him to give to my field 2 weeks ago, evaluation of how South Vietnamese are fighting themselves. They are fighting, he said, in a superior way. I use the word that he used. They are proceeding in a way that he believes is in accordance with the plan and holding their own against enemy attack. And he also pointed out another fact that, of course, has been overridden by the Laotian activity, that the operation in the Chow Plantation, led by Kim Tree, is going along in fashion much better than was expected, with a great number of enemy casualties. General Abrams put an excellent mark on those
people. Mr. President, you can report this week on South Vietnamese, I think, now the operation be limited in time and scope. Can you define those?
By time, the operation will be limited to the time that is necessary to accomplish the objective. The objective is not to occupy any part of Laos. The South Vietnamese are not there to stay. They're there to disrupt the enemy's lines of communication, their supply lines, their infiltration routes, and then get out. Once that is accomplished, if it's accomplished early, they will get out. If it takes longer time, they will stay in. There's also another limitation in terms of time, and that is the weather. Latter part of April or the early part of May, the rain has come, and they would have to get out then, because then the North Vietnamese also would pose no threat. In terms of area space, it is limited to the specific area that you see on the maps here. In terms of cutting across the trails, and it's more than one trail, there are three or four trails. The trails that are the supply lines. On which the South Vietnamese
would you have any further word on troop withdrawals for us at this time? Or frankly, you tell us about further troop withdrawals?
I will make a further announcement on troop withdrawals in the coming days before the May 1st period, when the last troop withdrawal period will expire. By that time, you know, 265 Americans will have been withdrawn. And the further withdrawal announcement will be made then. I can say today that as a result, partially of our success in Cambodia, and based on also the present success of the Laotian operation, that the troop withdrawal program will go further than our expectation. I should also point out, however, that as far as this year is concerned, even if the Laotian operation had not been undertaken by the South Vietnamese with our air support, the troop withdrawal program could have gone ahead on schedule. Well, this relates to insofar as American troop withdrawal is concerned. It's not this year, but next year. Next year, at the end of the year, down at quite a point. The Vietnamization program is very success creates quite a great danger, because then the number of ground combat troops that we will have
to this is a great success, then it could go next year much faster. Is that how right it does?
When I made the announcement about moving into Cambodia, I said that its purpose was to ensure our troops control, to reduce our casualties. And we hope to start the war. It has had those effects. Our casualties, even in this half week, in which we have moved in, which we have moved into air support and support of the South Vietnamese and suffered some air losses, were only half of what they were in the same week before Cambodia. So casualties are down half. And I should point out that casualties in the first month that we came to office were five times as great as they were in the month of January. One is too many, but it's at least progress. In terms of casualties, in terms of troop withdrawals, the Cambodian incursions,
and allows, as a matter of fact, to set our heights somewhat higher. The success of this operation guarantees the continued program and gives the prospect of a greater group of during the months ahead. I'm not going to speculate, however, as to what the troop patrol council will be on April 15th. That will deal with the situation at that time. At that time, we will not yet see the
Is it possible to say now, we are talking about numbers of troops being withdrawn, when the United States might be able to forego a ground combat rule in South Vietnam?
There will be an announcement on that score at some point. I am not going to give it now. At this time, when the negotiations are going on in Paris still, I'm being negotiated with no progress. We are not going to remove any incentive for a possible negotiation by announcing what our plans are for the down the road.
Mr. President, my question goes all of these questions. How far can you go in withdrawing U.S. troops without a resolution of the prisoner of war?
Well, if I have indicated that, everyone I'm sure would agree with me. As long as the North Vietnamese have any Americans as prisoners of war, there will be Americans in South Vietnam. And enough Americans to give them a percentage for losing prisoners.
Mr. President, would you be willing to join the Congress and Senator Javis as suggested in the resolution saying that it is our intention to withdraw all troops
from South Vietnam? I mean, in my October speech, if you recall, I call for a ceasefire. I call for a political settlement. And I also call for a total withdrawal of all forces if it is mutual. So the policy of this government is for a total withdrawal, provided there is control on the other side.
Is there a president? Explain this president's life and
I talked to Senator Brooke about that just a few days ago and asked him to speak to some of those who had made this request. And you know, I've seen a great number of congressmen and, of course, not only these 12, but all the members of Congress by the time I finish the breakfast tomorrow with them invited to the White House since the new Congress came here on the 7th. Senator Brooke now has been talking with, I understand, Congressman Diggs, several of the orders at least from previous Secretary Clinton, and I think that it is going to be worked out. I hope it is, because I'll be glad to talk to him. Senator, are you happy with the performance of the Supreme Court this year, the 2016? Why are you campaigning? Do you anticipate any of the appointments this year? Well, the second part of the question first is I'm just going to comment on you're a little bit aware of things like this. So I think I would know about it if there were. I have no indication of any intent to resign with regard to the Supreme Court's decisions. I don't believe that I should comment upon the wisdom of their decisions. I have great confidence in those who I am appointed to the court, and I have great respect to others who are on the court with whom I have to disagree that I
How concerned are you about the purposes of the Soviet nuclear program?
On December 10th, you may recall, I said that if a nuclear supplement were serviced from Cuba or in Cuba, that this would be a violation of our understanding with regard to the Soviet Union's activities, putting offensive or defensive, putting offensive weapons or in base in Cuba. Now, as far as this submarine is concerned, the question is a rather technical one. whether it is there for any protocol or whether it's there for service. We are watching it very closely. The Soviet Union is aware of the fact that we consider that there is an understanding, we will, of course, bring the matter to their attention if we find that there is any understanding as well.
Mr. President, may I ask you about the racial integration of suburban housing, a subject that you've treated twice this year? You expressed your opposition to forced integration, and you said you'll do what the law requires. In the meantime, the third sergeant commander down in the city, which remains to put the increased burden on HUD to move public housing in the suburbs, and a major case has been instituted in Blackjack, Missouri. The federal government has yet to announce its intention in regard to either of those cases. Will you appeal, or will you enter the Blackjack case? And what do you see as the overall role of the national administration in this area?
Well, to try to answer all of the questions, firstly, we have a good administration with regard to the Blackjack case. The Attorney General and HPD jointly are considering the Blackjack case, and I understand within approximately 30 days we'll have a recommendation to me as to what action that should be taken with regard to I will not indicate any further than that. I will have something more to say when I get the recommendation from the Attorney General and from the HPD. With regard to what you call, and what I have called, forced integration, let me just spend a moment indicating what I believe is the law in this country, and where I think the law's limits are. First, this administration will enforce the law of the land, which provides for open housing. Open cities, open suburbs, open neighborhoods are now a right for every American. Second, however, this administration will not go beyond the or in violation of the law by doing what I did, by using federal power, federal coercion, or federal money to force economic integration of neighborhoods. Now, what we will do, however, and what we are doing, is to try to give every American, and particularly American minorities, a greater opportunity to exercise a right. A right, for example, to live in any neighborhood means nothing unless you've got a job or a position which pays you enough to afford the house. That is a I will not speculate on what South Vietnam may do in defense of its national security. South Vietnam now, as we withdraw, has an ever-increasing responsibility to defend itself. South Vietnam will have to make decisions with regard to its ability to defend itself. I will only speak with regard to what the American action will be. The American action will be according to the guidelines of the economy, use of air power, where I believe that North Vietnam's actions may threaten our forces. Formal meetings. I have nothing to intend to report today, but I do want to say this. We will continue to pursue diplomacy for a primary reason. The primary reason being to negotiate some settlement with the POW. As we have to realize that as far as the negotiation affecting the political settlement for South Vietnam is concerned, time is running out for the North Vietnamese if they expect to negotiate with the United States. Because as our forces come out of South Vietnam, it means that the responsibility for negotiation increasingly then becomes that of South Vietnam. I say that looking to the future, we constantly are re-examining the possibility of any diplomatic initiatives. However, I believe that what I stated in October is very far-reaching, it's very comprehensive, it's a very fair proposal, and we stand on that at this time. I do not want to suggest that there are any more concessions coming from our side in North Vietnam. We're not going to make any more concessions. The time is for them to negotiate on the principles that we've laid out.
Mr. President, a question on the economy, sir. The construction unions and the industry apparently are not going to be able to come up with a voluntary plan to hold down wage and price increases. What actions do you take?
Secretary Hodgson is going to report to the finance very well. He has a meeting with the leader of the construction industry. I will not indicate now what action I'm going to take until I get his report, but there will be action. The reason there has to be action in this field will connect the things of the reasons that all of you have in your various columns and reports on this issue. I will put it very simply. Construction industry is a sick industry. It's a sick industry, not because of the quality of construction in the United States, but it's the highest quality of construction in the world, but because it's had two ways to die. When you find that wage increases have been high in a number of industries, but when they are an average of 16%, what has happened is that has not helped the workers in the construction industry, except those who are employed. We find that unemployment in the construction industry is double the national average. And we also find that the federal government has a major stake in this because looking at this budget, I have found that $14 billion of our budget in the next fiscal year will go in construction. Now, with that kind of financial interest in construction, it is essential that the federal government use its power to the extent that it can to bring about more reasonable settlements within that industry, wage and price development. That has taken that goal. You're all aware of some of the actions that have been discussed. I will consider them all and make a decision and we'll announce them.
Mr. President, may I ask a question? If I can get back into the conversation in a moment. There has been quite a bit of speculation about the possibility of the North Vietnamese shutting down through the DMZ. would this trap any obligations you may have on the bombing down in the North? And would you be in a position of having to retaliate when you cross the DMZ?
My action in turn, in case that happens, I do not believe it will happen. But my action will be guided by the same principles that I have laid out before. I would use the power of the United States, and particularly its power in the air, to the extent that I consider necessary to protect our remaining forces in our Vietnam. We have a considerable number of forces, as you know, on the DMZ. The bombing forces along Route 9, before you get to the border of Laos, are primarily American. I will not allow those forces to be in danger. I am asking North Vietnamese incursion if one should be undertaken. I think the very fact that the North Vietnamese know
that I intend to take strong action to deal with any person means that they are not going to take. If they do, then I can assure you that, I don't want to assure you, I simply want to make a record clear that I would not be bound, of course, by any so-called understandings, which they have already violated.
A few minutes ago, in response to Mr. Goldberg's question, you referred to your view of force and ready to run the future rather than saying you before. I have a little trouble by the distinction between force integration and enforcement of the laws which are on the books, which you, as you probably said, were pledged to enforce those laws against discrimination. Where does this line come between those two concepts?
In the one case, the laws in the book reveal as they accomplish human rights, the rights of an individual to a white house or an apartment, or rent a house or an apartment, without regard and not be barred because of his racial or religious or other background. In the other case, what we are talking about is economic consideration that has to do primarily with zoning. Where this is involved, there is a clear distinction. The law does not require, and it does not require, in life, does not allow the federal government to use its monetary and other power, coercive power, for the purpose of changing the economic pattern of a neighborhood. I think what the law does require is that there be open neighborhoods. The law does not require that the federal government set in provide in a neighborhood the type of housing that an individual could afford to move into. That's
for the company offer that Secretary Hodge
had a long discussion with me and with other leaders of the administration. Prior to going down, we developed a plan, and we also gave several options that he discussed with the leaders of the labor unions. He's a very persuasive man. I'm not going to concede that he struck out the Republican vote. But that he has, and will he have that?
Sure.
But the president doesn't have a lot of reminders of his reaction to Oh, I'm not disappointed. All reforms are much like. When we consider reforms, we must remember that they're always opposed by the establishment. And by the establishment, I don't refer to that, what we used to talk about in 1964, some of our doctrines, I am referring to the establishment of Congress, the establishment of the federal bureaucracy, and also green organizations, labor organizations, farm organizations, business organizations, all got used to dealing with government as it is, and they're always afraid of a change. As far as Congress is concerned, bureaucracy is concerned, what about the state of the union? They are very, very reluctant to give up power. We expected a difficult time in getting revolutionary improvement. But let me put it if I can, another term, we talk about foreign policy. We in Washington in government live at the very summit of government. And here we do find opposition dug in, establishmentarians fighting the status quo, or for just a little change, or for putting more money to existing programs rather than reforming. That's the case here. But that's what's happening. That's what is happening.
down in the valleys where the people live, you will find there that the people in the front line, the leaders in the front line, the governors, the mayors, the county officials, an overwhelming majority of them are for revenue sharing. Both general revenue sharing and the other, overwhelming majority. And also, an overwhelming majority of the people of this country are for revenue sharing. Now, eventually, then, it will be approved. I'm not suggesting exactly the form we have submitted, but it will be approved because those of us who are in Washington have to reflect eventually what the majority of the people of this country feel. And as I look at the situation now, I would say I expected that we would have this kind of opposition. However, I must say that the single reaction that we've had at the grassroots and among governors and mayors and county officials has been greater than I expected, and that will be decisive factor.
First, let's distinguish the procedures with regard to civil rights guarantees. Those procedures, of course, will be set up in our revenue sharing programs, and civil rights laws and requirements will be enforced. We cannot have programs that are paid for by the tax money of all the people, but there only some people. Second, however, with regard to accounting procedures, I can assure you that despite some speculation on this story, we don't intend to set up a huge network of bureaucrats to go down and examine the cities and counties and states with regard to whether or not they are properly spending funds. What we are going to do there is to try to handle each case on an individual basis or naturally take action where there's a failure to use the funds properly, but not set up something more government.
Seems to be balking on the yarn proposal. If it continues to balk, would you use your power to persuade the that that be accepted along that line?
I don't think it would be helpful to warrant to speculate here that we would use powers to persuade the digital or the kind of media across the world on the Middle East. Let me say this, that I have been encouraged. I'm not overly optimistic. I'm polyamorous. It's a terribly difficult area of the world. As I pointed out in previous press conferences, the hatreds that go back over centuries, and they're not going to be removed very easily. The hatreds make an enemy. But live and let live. Relationship. But I am encouraged by the developments that occurred so far. The Egypt is more forthcoming than we had expected. And I believe that Israel has been somewhat more forthcoming. I have hopes that when the present ceasefire expires, it will be extended. I will say that neither side has no gain in starting the fighting. It is a war in which neither side will be a loser. And so, as far as the Middle East is concerned, it is a difficult area. They're going to day-to-day blast by one side or the other, or concessions by one side or the other, before an eventual settlement is reached. But for the United States, publicly, to move there and indicate what we think ought to be done, while these delegates are going to be so on, would not help.
Thanks for having
me. Important part on now that you suggested that the Saigon regime is making the decision as to what it will do in its own interest, particularly in reference to crossing the DMZ. Most Americans believe that the decision to go into Laos was made in Washington, and decisions like crossing the DMZ would have necessary to be made here as well because of the use of American air power. Could you straighten out for us where the line is between the decision that the Saigon regime will make and the, this government will make?
Any decisions, Mr. Westergaard, that call for American participation would have to be approved in Washington. The decision with regard to Laos was one that was approved in Washington. I approved the operation, and I approved the decision to use American air power. The operation itself was jointly developed primarily by the South Vietnamese, but with, of course, a very close cooperation and consultation with General Abrams and his staff. But wherever American participation to any extent is required, you can be sure that decision will be made here. Now, when you put it in terms of what would happen in the event of the South Vietnamese went to North Vietnam, I'm not going to speculate on what they will or will not do. I will only say that the remaining of American has to be approved here. And if South Vietnam's decision with regard to what they do would depend upon American cooperation, then of course it could not be undertaken without our approval. Thank you. operating particular. Thank you.